Morning. Wonderful meditation. It gave me more than a feeling. Yeah, there's more of those where that one came from. All right. So I understand that Brad and Allison have given you a fairly expansive notion of psychedelic to work with, more than just pharmacology, nature, music, meditation, that sort of thing. But I want to be upfront with you right from the start. I'm just about mushrooms, man. It's pretty much mushrooms just all the way down. So that's what I got. I'm not opposed. They're, of course, right about the experiences, the mind-transforming experiences to be had from those other experiences. And as somebody who's done, you know, many, many hours of meditation, and had amazing experiences, I do want to say that meditation is just really hard. You know, it's hard, and it hurts my knees. I'm all for it. I think it's a great thing. But people say, well, you know, these mushrooms, man, that's a shortcut, you know? That's a shortcut. But it just always reminds me a little bit of the people. It's like, I'm injured, and the ambulance knows a shortcut on the way to the hospital. I say, well, no, I want to go the longest, most complicated way that you've got, you know, because I was raised a Protestant, and I need to suffer a hell of a lot more than I'm suffering right now. Okay, well, that's it. Thank you. That was really got a great start. I'm feeling pretty good, so. I got three major points, I guess, and three populations that correspond to those points. What magic mushroom, psilocybin, the active component, can do in terms of gains in knowledge, both through research and personal slash spiritual psychological experience. That real change is possible. I know that's a theme that's been touched on before, either through neuroplasticity or reflection or just sort of staying high all the time or... That was a joke too, sorry. And then the last one I guess I'm going to try to show it even more than just talk about it, which is we do need to lighten up just a little bit. Not you guys. You guys are great, right? But generally speaking, in spiritual communities, so when I'm in Asia and I've done retreats there, it's like there's just so much joy, laughter, mirth, you know, deep appreciation for irony in the room, just really lovely environment. And I do a retreat here, and it's like everybody's dog just died, you know, and they're working so hard, you know. It's like this joyless quest for joy that you find. I know I'll be joyful someday. I don't know when, but. And then the three groups, we've got especially treatment-resistant patients suffering from a range of mental illnesses, 50% of the American population, so say the researchers at this point, are afflicted with some kind of diagnosable mental affliction or illness, and half of those, at least, are treatment resistant, whether it's talk therapy or pharmacology, SSRIs, what have you. And so we'll start with the research, talk a little bit about what science is telling us. So that group, the other group would be religious leaders. A short piece by Michael Pollan again in the New Yorker about a month or so ago, you might have seen, on what happens if you give religious leaders, people who are devoted their life to thinking about God or the divine or the source, reality, whatever you call it, what if you give them some psilocybin? What happens to those folks? And I'll say just a word about that. And then this last group we'll call me. And I'll just speak a little bit from professional and personal experience. So the Center for the Neuroscience of Psychedelics, as Todd mentioned, Harvard Medical School and Mass General, they run annual conferences on the study of what's happening. There are like 119 clinical trials going on just in Cambridge-Boston area alone. The next time you're in Cambridge, if people seem especially blissed out to you, it's because everybody is in one of these trials. You know, and they're having a better time than we are. $350 billion is about what we spend just on depression treatment all by itself. It's the leading cause of mental disability, both in the United States and in Europe. Psychedelic compounds, particularly psilocybin, right? Whether taken as a synthetic compound or dried and eaten, sometimes in tea, the number of ways to ingest it, in clinical trials showing a success rate of around 70%. Now that's ballpark figure, you know, still a lot of work to be done on this, but that's about 30% higher than the best that Big Pharma has been able to come up with through SSRIs. So really promising, almost twice as good. And one of the most recent findings that's especially promising is that nobody knew starting this stuff, you know, how many doses, how long do you have to do this for? Recent study, 2022, and then again in 2025, so this year, two studies corroborating one another, that even sometimes one single dose, usually the initial dose would be 3 to 4 grams of psilocybin, can have lasting positive effects for up to 1 year, an entire year. So rather incredible, and again, promising results. But I need to throw out the obligatory caution right away. I'm not a physician, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a social worker. As my 17-year-old likes to point out to me, you're really not qualified to do much of anything, actually. but nonetheless, I'm qualified to learn and then tell you what I've learned. So the 70% number kind of mirrors across these populations, from treatment-resistant patients to the religious leaders, though they score even a little bit higher, as you'll see. And then people doing this for personal spiritual growth or evolution reasons, about 70% of those folks, in terms of aggregated data, report generally positive experiences on anywhere between 2 to 3 to 4. 5 grams of psilocybin is what they call a heroic dose. I'm not advocating that. I'm not advocating that you go home today, look around for whatever mushrooms you've got lying around, just take them all, see what happens. Don't do that. In the studies, one of the things that's really important to point out, and the folks at Mass General were emphasizing this heavily, was that all of the clinical trials were being supported by psychotherapists. Everybody was engaged in talk therapy along with ingesting whatever dosage of psilocybin they were ingesting. That was a huge part. Nobody's ferreted out perfectly, of course, what the relationship is of, you know, the positive effects because of psychotherapy as opposed to psilocybin, but working in tandem, they seem to be showing very strong positive effects. 10% of folks, again, generally across the board, having what I'll call negative or challenging experiences. I don't like the term bad trip. I do think there is something challenging to be learned even by difficult experiences. And then there's another, that 15 to 20%, you know, again, the math is wavy here, but really not experiencing much of anything, whether it's for therapeutic reasons or sort of spiritual growth, personal exploration, nothing much happens at all. That could be strain, that could be species, that could be the mindset that people are bringing to it. There are a number of factors involved when you sit down to do this kind of work, okay? Why does it work in the scientific sense? The notion of neuroplasticity, I know you had a neuroscientist here, I won't spend a lot of time talking about that, but this notion that we can, throughout our lifetimes, create new neuronal patterns, new synaptic connections, that seems to be borne out by almost all the science at this point. Better when you're young, in terms of the flexibility of the brain. The problem with doing this with young people, of course, is precisely that their brains aren't fully formed. Nobody's done any live, in-person, longitudinal studies on developing brains to say, hey, this population seems to profit, these folks, not so much, too bad. Right? The ethics of that become really tough. The IRB boards tend to frown on, you know, experimenting with live subjects. The one place in the world where they're showing some positive responses for kids, 16 to 24-year-olds, using MDMA, what popularly gets called ecstasy, is in the Netherlands. Shocking, right? The other Dutch, as we know. No, not those Dutch. Those Dutch. Oh, okay. They have been doing some trials with young folks and getting pretty good results with kids who have anxiety disorders using fairly small, low doses of MDMA, again, supported by traditional talk psychotherapy. All right. So that's going pretty well. Overall, The research continues to be promising. I've read through any number of NIH summaries. You remember the NIH, it was a scientific body that we studied. But all the articles since the resurgence and renaissance of studies using psilocybin, LSD, and the rest of psychedelics starting in the mid-2000s, late 2009, 2010, they all end with my favorite academic line of all time, which is, we need more research. So everybody's a little wary of being definitive at this point, but the odds overwhelmingly are in the favor of this being a very strong indicator of helping us with people's mental health. I know Ozempic is the new miracle drug, but I think I would argue we've got this even better, stronger, more powerful miracle drug right at our feet, the Earth's gift to us. And I know it's very, really important to lose weight, but it's also important to lose the weight of the world sometimes. And that's my, you can quote me on that now. All right, the religious folks. So, and I just want to read you one paragraph. This was in the New Yorker, like I said, about a month ago. And it's a decade-old study. They were having trouble getting it published because there were a couple of lawsuits about the ways in which it was done. So it's not the tightest, you know, socially scientific study of all time. But I think some of what it suggests is worth thinking about. Again, you've got a handful. I think there were about 20 people in the study. And by the way, they were looking for clergy from all the different world's faith traditions. It was really tough to find Islamic clerics who would do this. They found the one woman who agreed to do it and completely changed her life. It was tough to find, you know, you could find the Christian clerics, but not easy. The Buddhists have a general tendency, traditional Buddhism, as opposed to using mind-altering substances, just as a general sort of tenet of the religion, Hinduism as well. But Pollan is funny in an article. He says the rabbis came out of the wall. He said, so we had to turn away the rabbis. They were like all about it. here's one, the number of things, but I'll just read one in the interest of time. So these are people who spent all their lives thinking, or not all their lives, we all know clerics, part of their lives, thinking about, again, theology, religious faith encounters. Would they encounter imagery or symbolism from their faiths, or might their experiences point to something more universal, a common core shared by all religions? Among participants who had two sessions, the researchers found that a striking number, 79%, so that's above the usual 70, reported that the experience had enriched their prayer, their effectiveness in their vocation, and their sense of the sacred in daily life. 96% rated their first encounters with psilocybin as being among the top five most spiritually significant experiences of their lives. And this is pretty consistent across the board with people who are not clerics as well. So one of the things that's interesting to me about that is because you hear mindset being so important if you're going to have a psilocybin experience. Going into it with the right mindset is critical. So if you are and have been turned towards religious / spiritual thinking, you know, concerns that wisdom traditions concern themselves with, would that be amplified? Now you can say that's a bias effect, there's confirmation bias even in psilocybin, and this has not been corroborated. This is the only one of its kind so far that we know of. But I think it's fascinating to maybe take from that, the lessons of this particular study is, look, as we think, so shall we become, right? What we devote our attention to, it's the most basic insight from almost all the wisdom traditions, but it just seems to be borne out again and again. What we're devoting ourselves to, what we're thinking about, what we spend our time doing, then under the influence of a compound that, you know, acts to inhibit our usual ego defenses, does that get amplified or do we find ourselves going in a different direction? Well, this would suggest it gets amplified. There was one woman, she's at the Harvard Divinity School, who described her experience as decidedly negative, and that it was, to quote her, it was like just going into the abyss. There was nothing, not nothing in the Buddhist sense of no thingness in which you realize the oneness of everything. It was like, no, there was just nothing. And she didn't go back for a second session, but she was the only one. Others, and here is either the danger or benefit of doing this stuff seriously, or taking it seriously, in a jovial mirth sense, which is, look, people change their lives doing this. I've had two clients in the last 4 years who, after their encounters with this, they've left their spouses, they've quit their jobs, One of them devoted himself full-time to this work, becoming a guide. People, it does upend the way they see themselves, their role in the world, what they end up doing. And the Islamic cleric, not so much about it anymore. She's doing something quite different. And two of the fairly the Christian pastors who came from fairly conservative backgrounds, both have proposed and have some money now from foundations to back this up, have proposed that the avenue for revitalizing religion in America is for the churches to start administering psilocybin. I'll just take a wild guess from your reaction that you're having a hard time imagining the church you came from. And now communion means something like really, really. Really significantly, perhaps, different. Though it's an article of faith in the psychedelic community, as I'm sure many of you know, that most of the world's religious traditions, wisdom traditions, were in fact started, have their origins in people's, you know, psychedelic experiences, whatever kind of whatever it was. All right, how do we know any of this stuff in terms of, you know, people are reporting 79% or 80% or 60% more positive experiences? You'll be happy to know that there is something in the world that's actually called the Mystical Experience Index, developed by social scientists. It's got a subset. This is my all-time favorite. There's a subset scale called the Transcendence of Time and Space Scale, which I think is the coolest thing like ever. And they have questions like this. And, you know, frankly, if you were serious, you would be asking yourself the same questions after every Sunday. Sorry, Ben. Experience of the insight that all is one. Awareness of the life or life-living presence in all things. A gain of insightful knowledge experienced at an intuitive level. Certainty of an encounter with the ultimate reality. Well, you get the gist of it, right? And then you sort of aggregate that. It's on a Likert scale, 1 to 5. And you end up with a 3.5 in terms of transcendence in space and time. How was your experience? It was a 3.9 on the transcendence of space and time, but I still can't dance to it. So, you know, sort of that sort of thing. All right, lots more to be said about this, but I promised you a little bit of mirth, hopefully to show you rather than just talk about it. And now it's all about me. So this is really the fun part, I think the part we've been waiting for, right? So. That quantitating things is great. I mean, we've got to have that, right? We were talking about reality earlier in the shared group. If you're wondering what goes on from 9 to 10, it's like, what is reality is a big part of that conversation. It was a great question. I really enjoyed the conversation. And part of course, the way we've answered that is through the scientific method and quantifying things. But the qualitative, the narrative, remains essential from my point of view. So I haven't tried to write anything along the lines of what I'm about to share with you for a long time. So we'll see how it goes. I'm gonna annotate some of it as we go too. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. On the way home, my wife will tell me, that was not a good idea. Or she'll say, all right, that worked for some people. All right, what I'm gonna try to do is, because it's so hard to describe these experiences, I'm gonna reach back in time here to my first most significant experience when I was 24 years old. Imagine a small room in Boston. I'm living there. It's a friend of mine who's experiencing these matters who acts as my guide. It's cozy, we've got a lot of books, there are a lot of, you know, icons. We're both in, you know, theology school, pursuing both religion and spirituality. And the mushrooms play a part. So in my reflection, it goes like this. The hymn has started, the note has sounded, time to get yourself a little grounded. But ironically, by not holding on too tight, just put your feet on the floor. You've ingested a heroic dose of a mushroom spore. It takes a minute, two or three, but before long, you're engaged in fractal geometry. Now, fractals, for those who don't know, are one of the ways in which some mushrooms grow. Fractals are patterns that are self-similar, just across different scales. As you watch this language of the universe unfold, you forget that math is something that you fail. Right? It's annotation. One of the first glimpses that I got was things that never made sense to me all of a sudden made some sense to me. I don't want to take a test. on geometry. But this is a very classic experience where, somebody was saying earlier in the group, there's a kind of architecture or universal language to the universe that reveals itself through patterns, symbols, colors, and forms. It's a very common first experience. All right, it's your first glimpse of what's to come, the underlying beauty of nature, your own mind, and a growing sense that, again, maybe the Buddhists were right, all is one. All right, I promised some irony. Here's the irony. So the Buddhists, as I said, traditionally very opposed to mind-altering substances. You've got to get to this through natural, quote-unquote, natural methods, reason, logic, meditation, etc. The irony, wonderful irony, is that so much of psychedelic experience confirms very basic Buddhist insights. So who would actually appreciate that particular irony? The Buddhists do. They tend to laugh about it a lot. That's cool. They're happy, very happy for me, but they still think, well, you probably shouldn't do it. All right. You settle in, no longer so wary. This isn't so scary. My brain, or is it my mind, reveals now its treasures beyond anxiety, ego, and beyond depression. What's next to leave an impression? Well, if you're me, it's Peter Max meets Dr. Seuss. For those of you under 50, Peter Max, German-American artist who really was the iconic artist slash cartoonist of the psychedelic area. When you think of psychedelic art, pop art, it's Peter Max. So Peter Max meets Dr. Seuss, a riot of characters, colors, and nonsense that leaves my lips a little loose. And I hear myself saying with insight bordering on profundity, boy, that Dr. Seuss was ahead of his time. I'm sure glad his books were given to me. All right, annotation. And you've heard Pollan talks about this and, you know, how to change your mind. And other, when you're in these experiences, it's like, okay, is it the beauty and purity of simplicity, or are you an idiot, right? And it's hard sometimes to distinguish because there's a banality sometimes to what seems profound. Here's how I've come to think of it, both in my own experience and watching other folks go through it as a nominal guide, and that is, I'll just reference the Buddhists again here for a second, but they've got this thing where they make a clear distinction between intuition and intellect. So there's all kinds of stuff you can understand intellectually. Said, but the intuitive, it's like, oh, I get it at some ineffable deep now, comes in through the back door, you know, just knowledge that becomes certain and irrevocable in some way. The intuition of that, things that are really simple, all of a sudden become terribly profound. I think probably most of you have had that experience where you don't have to defend or apologize for saying something that sounds like a Hallmark card because now you really get it in a way that maybe you hadn't gotten it before. And besides, it seems to me that the Cat in the Hat shares my suspicion about earnestness, and I like being affirmed in that way. All right, in due time, things do get a little deeper. The hills I'm peering over a little steeper. In short order, the wrathful deities of India's wisdom traditions make themselves known, and I'm a little apprehensive about what I'm about to be shown, because Mahakala, Yamantaka, Bhairava, these are the fierce protectors sent to purify karma. Purify karma. It's not a good thing for me. Purify karma. It's not going to be easy. I remind myself to stay calm, to attend, to sit still without judgment, and they begin to show me what life can look like without my armor. I think I know now where this might be leading. Why? Because I'm in theological school and I've been reading about enlightenment and nirvana and touching the face of God. But now, with this experience, none of that seems quite so odd. So I get ready for the final reveal, the door that will open and show me all that is finally real. The gods, the demons, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas glow and grin, lining my path and inviting me in. And I deserve this because I'm 24 years old and I spent my whole life waiting for this moment. Cutting through delusion and ignorance with my youthful, metaphorical, slightly arrogant knife. And there now I'm on the road. I reach the square. I'm able to focus. It all comes into view. All that is ultimate and all that is new. I look around. Here I am at the pinnacle, and I'm standing in the midst of at least 10 Muppets. From Kermit to Fozzie to the Swedish chef, it's clear the secret of life is held by puppets. Wait. Okay, I see. This must be symbolic. Something like, okay, we must give ourselves over to really good TV shows to stem from what's chaotic. I wish I could just stay here and ponder this moment, but the mushroom shrugs, whatever. I'm whisked away again and now into deep, deep blue-black space, following an Einsteinian curve into peace and into grace. Humor, silliness, images, thoughts, conceptions, they all subside. I feel like I'm inside. But what? A place? A state? All I can tell you, it was somewhere beyond concern, beyond worry, beyond words or death. I understood, if only for a second, the Buddha's smile and Christ's last breath. I understand, I understood. Beyond good and evil, I see what's perennial and what's primeval. I am beyond the beyond for once in my existence, and for as long as the plant lets me, I feel the absence of distance. I rest. But too soon. I also understand I'll return from this journey, will take my place back in the world, pick up my roles, my problems, my name. But I also know from that moment on, I will never really ever be quite the same. Thanks for... Thanks for being so groovy.